The American Civil Liberties Union is accusing the Obama administration of using statements elicited through torture to justify the confinement of a detainee it represents at the U.S. military prison in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The ACLU is asking a federal judge to throw out those statements and others made by Mohammed Jawad, an Afghan who may have been as young as 12 when he was captured. During U.S. military commission hearings on his case, a judge found that Afghan interrogators threatened to kill Jawad and his family if he did not confess to playing a role in a grenade attack. Jawad then admitted to participating in the attack. Judge Stephen Henley ruled that prosecutors could not use Jawad's confessions during military commission proceedings. Despite that ruling, Jawad's lawyer, Jonathan Hafetz, says in a lawsuit that the Justice Department wants to use those very confessions to justify Jawad's detention. Hafetz said those statements were tainted because Jawad was beaten, forced into painful stress positions, chained to a wall, and deprived of sleep in Bagram. In Guantanamo, Hafetz said Jawad was interrogated more than 50 times and subjected to sleep deprivation. Jawad's situation received attention last year when a military prosecutor abruptly quit his post, saying that the case was riddled with problems and that the prisoner had suffered physical and psychological mistreatment while in custody.
It turns out that the warrantless wiretapping program that the Bush administration was engaged in is only one very tiny piece of an overall bigger, much bigger surveillance program, that was undertaken by the Bush administration, signed off on by George W. Bush on a regular basis. He had to review the program every 45 days and give his authorization, and he did that. And Dick Cheney, his vice president, who was tasked with seeing that the program actually was implemented, and the CIA. And it's interesting because this report that was released this week by five inspector generals, they were supposed to review the scope of FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which is this 30-year-old act that has created the secret court that would review the government electronic surveillance and has allowed government electronic surveillance to go on. These five inspector generals said, well, you know, look, this program was way bigger than just the warrantless wiretapping of foreign communications with U.S. citizens and foreign nationals resident in the United States. It encompassed a much bigger thing that, of course, we can't talk about in this report because then that would be declassifying it and releasing it to the public. So as it turns out, there are portions of this program, huge portions of this program, we know nothing about. People are looking at it and nobody other than the president and the CIA and the director of the CIA had any idea that this was going on. Nobody else in the federal government, including Congress, was able to review what was going on in this program and sign off on it.
Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution.
That was Look Back at Last Week in History, and this is This Week in Radical History for the week starting July 13th.
What we got to say, yeah. Fight the power. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What we got to say, yeah. Fight the power. Come on.
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes.
Hey! Inspiration for This Week in Radical History came from the Slingshot Organizer. Special thanks to the Radio Roots crew from WBAI in New York, whose audio I am again gently lifting for this week's show.
On this day, July 13th in 1787, the Continental Congress of the United States unanimously passed the Northwest Ordinance, which established a formal process to admit new states. The ordinance also provided many of the civil rights that would eventually be replicated in the Constitution's Bill of Rights. It distinguished slave states from free states, prohibiting slavery in the territories north and west of the Ohio River. Lastly, the ordinance stated very clearly that Native Americans would be treated with respect, that their freedom would never be compromised, and that their land would never be taken without their consent. I wonder what happened.
This Week in Radical History, July 14th, 1764. Conspiracy of the Equals member and precursor to the French anarchist Jean-Francisque Vallée is born. Vallée hated the dictator who in essence took over the French Revolutionary government and his excesses, as well as the middle class running of the country after King Louis is deposed. Speaking of the French Revolution, Happy Bastille Day. In 1798, storming the Bastille heralds the French Revolution, begun by Parisian crowds seeking arms and the liberation of political prisoners. It signals a new period in history with the taking of power by the capitalist class and French bourgeoisie. The people of Paris stormed the prison of Bastille, symbol of tyranny, federal authority, and divine right of kings. The revolution creates a formidable enthusiasm not only among the French working class but also around the world. Unfortunately, the middle class gains control, its power displayed in a basket of guillotines and totalitarian temptations, leading to reaction and empire and various wars of conquest, all in the name of freedom and revolution. In our own revolutionary freedom-loving country in 1798, Federalist Sponsor Sedition Act made it a crime to write, utter, or publish any false, scandalous, or malicious statements about the government, Congress, or the President. Anyone open against the government throughout the country were promptly arrested. Let freedom ring. On July 14, 1811, working-class people around England start to organize against what they see as business taking advantage of them with their expensive machines. Known as the Luddites, the workers organize and have nighttime raids on business-owned machine shops. The government quickly moves to make it a capital crime to destroy machinery. Also on this date in 1912, Woody Guthrie, people songwriter, is born. Woody crisscrosses the nation, living and singing among the dispossessed. Over the course of his life, he composed over 1,000 ballads and celebrated, in his songs and his prose, the great human spirit. His songs included "This Land Is Your Land," "Bound for Glory," "Union Made," and other American Revolutionary classics. On July 14, 1916, federal authorities demand removal of the office of anarchist journal Mother Earth from its location at 20 East 125th Street in New York. Being good anarchists and not wanting to violate the letter of the law, they promptly moved the Mother Earth offices down the street. Also on July 14, 1935, black Americans in Harlem, New York, begin demonstrating in support of Ethiopian struggle against Italian fascism. They also start to organize volunteer brigades to go over and fight. Also on that date, 1937, because of high casualties while fighting the fascists in Spain, predominantly anarchist volunteers in the Lincoln and Washington battalions merge into one brigade, known as the Lincoln Brigade. Lastly, for July 14, 1998, 28 food not bombs and homeless activists arrested in San Francisco United Nations Plaza during a nonviolent direct action demonstration seeking to reclaim public space and parks, which is increasingly being made inaccessible to homeless people. This week in radical history for July 15th, 1205, Pope Innocent III says Jews are doomed to perpetual servitude and subjugation due to the crucifixion of Jesus, a view still held by many religious kooks such as Mel Gibson to this day. Also on July 15, 1963 in New York, anti-draft riots end after 3 days. Over 1,000 dead in riots, including many free blacks, attacked and murdered by Confederate sympathizers. Of course, if you had enough money, you could buy your way out of the draft. Not much has changed in military service to this day. More news in Land of the Free in 1917. Alexander Berkman and Emma Goldman and many others indicted under the new Espionage Act for their anti-draft activities. Berkman and Goldman would get 2 years in prison and fined $10,000. Also on July 15, 1917, 50,000 lumberjacks strike for an 8-hour workday. Also on that date in 1918, U.S. intelligence agencies begin to circulate the names and addresses of over 8,000 Mother Earth subscribers, targeting them for investigations. Reluctantly, they decide it is better to close a Mother Earth bookstore than to let the government continue to harass anarchist subscribers. On this date in 1919, the U.S. War Department announces that it is classifying more than 337,000 American men as draft dodgers. Also on that date in 1958, Marines invade Lebanon to protect American interests. Also on July 15, 1974, appearing live on a Florida TV station, newswoman Christine Chubbuck finishes reading the news to her Florida audience and says, "And now, in keeping with Channel 4D's policy of always bringing you the latest blood and guts, in full color you're about to see another first, an attempted suicide," unquote. Reaching into a shopping bag behind her desk, she pulls out a revolver and shoots herself in the head. Propaganda the deed on live TV. Two more items for July 15, 1978. The longest walk, transcontinental walk by Native American justice, begun on February 11th, arriving in Washington, D.C. on this date from Alcatraz Island, with over 30,000 marchers. Also on that date, 1985, animal rights activists begin a sit-in at the National Institute of Health to protest funding of experimental head injury lab at the University of Pennsylvania where they'd be willing to bludgeon monkeys in the head for the research. This week in radical history for July 16th, 1099, Following Christ's teaching of love thy neighbor, crusaders herded the Jews of Jerusalem into a synagogue and set it afire. Also on July 16, 1439, in England, a kissing ban is enforced in an attempt to stop the spread of pestilence and disease. The prohibitions fail as people only pay it lip service. It's all kind of tongue-in-cheek. Also on July 16, 1835, 2,400 Cherokees shipped out of Montgomery, Alabama, for the Arkansas River as part of the forced relocation of all Indians in U.S. territories west of the Mississippi River. Basic consolidation of over a century of the theft of all Indian lands to the east, primarily through bribery, theft, murder, cheating, and looting, and an unending string of broken legal treaties. Preparations for more of the same to come to the west in coming decades. Also on July 16th, the Great Railroad Strike of 1877 begins with a wildcat strike of 30 railroad firemen in Martinsburg, West Virginia, protesting wage cutbacks and escalating into 2 weeks of national workers' rebellion against the railroad industry and federal government. Riots killed dozens in the Midwest and East Coast, and strikers briefly seized the city governments of Pittsburgh and St. Louis. Workers without unions to tame and control them successfully stopped the trains for 3 to 4 days to as much as a week, while destroying and seizing property and even, quote, managing, unquote, as if it was their own. Also on July 16, 1927, Nicaragua, first collective aerial bombing in history by U.S. warships occur as a precursor to the invasion of that country to protect American interests.
No more Iraqs, no more Kosovos, no more El Salvadors. These are not isolated incidents of stupidity. They're part of a long, bloody history of foreign policy being conducted for the financial interests of the wealthy few. It violates our Constitution, it endangers our national security, it mortgages our future, it sacrifices our children. It must stop. The men and women in our armed forces protect our borders and our people, not the financial interests of Folgers, Chiquita Banana, Exxon, and Halliburton.
No, Virginia, there is no Santa Claus, no Great Pumpkin, no Easter Bunny, and no Tooth Fairy. And as though that weren't bad enough, here's another shocker. The U.S. government has done some bad things over the years and will almost certainly continue to do them in the years ahead. Foreign policy has very little to do with morality. And as long as any action can be justified by explaining that it was performed in the national interest, that will continue to be the case. And so we give support to repressive governments in South Korea and Brazil and Chile because it is in our national interest to do so. We will supply sophisticated weapons to backward countries and betray an entire people like the Kurds, all because it is in our national interest. What may be difficult to accept is that there's nothing new about that. In fact, it's what we hire our Secretary of State and our Foreign Service to do for us. The myth is that since the First World War, we were ever able to conduct our foreign policy any other way. And at best it is naive, at worst hypocritical, that they don't understand what's involved in that harsh reality. I'm Ted Koppel in New York.
Also on July 16, 1934, beginning the San Francisco General Strike, 127,000 workers participate. A longshoreman strike spreads and becomes a two-day general strike, paralyzing and forcing a settlement by the government and the capitalists. Also on this date in 1936 in Barcelona, Spain, the anarcho-trade unionists of the powerful CNT starts to distribute weapons to the workers to counter the intimate threat of the right-wing military coup, and the Spanish Civil War begins. Quoting them, "We had a clear impression that if the politicians feared fascism, they'd fear even more the people armed." Read George Orwell's Homage to Catalonia for a great book about the anarchist times in Spain.
People, the time has
come. This is your Radio World reporter, Hannah George. On this day, July 16th in 1944, 11 years before Rosa Parks, a 27-year-old black woman named Irene Morg refused to give up her seat to a white passenger on a Greyhound bus. The driver stopped the bus in Virginia and summoned the sheriff, who dragged her off the bus. Although Morgan resisted the sheriff, she was eventually arrested and charged for resisting arrest and violating Virginia's segregation law. Morgan took her case to the Supreme Court, and 2 years later, it was decided that segregation on interstate travel was unconstitutional. Despite this ruling, southern states refused to accept the desegregation of interstate buses and trains.
A couple more items for July 16th, 1945. The first atomic bomb explodes in Trinity Site, New Mexico. Never given notice to the civilians living downrange from the site, days later the U.S. would drop two nuclear bombs on Japan. The U.S. is the only country in the world to use nukes on civilian population. Also on this day in 1946, Notices are tacked to the doors of black churches in Georgia reading, "The first nigger who votes in Georgia will be dead nigger. True Southern hospitality." Also in 1973, in another obvious violation of international law, the Senate Armed Service Committee begins probed into allegations that the U.S. Air Force had made 3,500 secret B-52 bombing raids into the neutral country of Cambodia. Lastly, on this date in 1987, Nicaragua, in the first major action since Ali North's effort to make them folk heroes, the Contras kill 3 children and a pregnant woman. Ronald Reagan illegally financed these Contras and argued that American citizens should aid them, bizarrely comparing them to the Abraham Lincoln Brigade of the 1930s, the American primarily anarchists who fought against Franco and the fascist insurgents. These are the same Contras who ran drug rings to finance their attempts to overthrow the legal government. This day in radical history for July 17, 1794, the Whiskey Rebellion begins with a mob of 500 armed men protesting a new excise tax on small distilleries, but not large government-influenced and controlled distilleries, clash with troops at Fort Pitt. Within 3 weeks, 15,000 uniformed U.S. militia enter into the fray after the strikers fired upon U.S. revenues collector and burned down his home. This would be the largest internal fighting since the founding of the country. Also on July 17, 1862, Congress authorized President Lincoln to accept blacks for military service. U.S. Army can use blacks as laborers as well. Over 186,000 African Americans serve in the Union Army, with 38,000 losing their lives fighting the South's slave owners. Also on that date in 1917, the Justice Department instructs the attorneys and special agents to keep tabs on local Wobblies, IWW, Industrial Workers of the World, and ascertain their plans, sources of income, and any data that might link them to anti-war activities. No incriminating evidence surfaces, however. It was the FISA bill of its time. People, the
time's come. On this day, July 17th, 1944, a huge explosion at the Port Chicago Naval Ammunition Base in California killed 320 Navy men and injured 390 others, the majority of whom were black. World War II was a particularly controversial time for black soldiers in the U.S. Armed Forces, which were still heavily segregated. Many black enlistees were assigned to Port Chicago to load highly explosive materials onto Navy ships, despite being untrained for this task. They encountered rampant racism and poor work conditions and were deliberately uninformed of the dangers they faced. The month following the explosion, black sailors at Port Chicago staged the Port Chicago Mutiny in an attempt to resist the Navy's racist policies.
Two more items for July 17, 1997, Italy. Cops raid anarchist centers and homes across the country. The Italian Anarchist Federation denounces the raids as a thinly veiled attempt to intimidate and criminalize the movement. Also in 1998, New York Times reveals reports admits CIA worked hand-in-hand with drug trafficking around the country. This week in radical history for July 18th, I got four items. 1879, Rose Pastor Stokes is born. She'd eventually be sentenced to 10 years for writing anti-war letter to the editor. Also on July 18th, 1913, book burning in Seattle, Washington, as sailors destroy the IWW, Industrial Workers of the World, Union Hall, busting windows and burning books they found there. These guardians of freedom, liberty, and the American way also ransacked the Socialist Party headquarters. Also on that date, 1969, proving no one is above the law, Senator Ted Kennedy offers Mary Jo Kopchne a lift home at the Chappaquiddick, Massachusetts. Kennedy drives off a dike bridge, killing an unmarried 28-year-old passenger. Kennedy left the scene of the accident and reported nothing to police until the following day.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Hannah George. On this day, July 19th, 1979, the Sandinista National Liberation Front overthrew the Nicaraguan dictator Anastasio Somoza Debayle. The U.S. had appointed his father as head of the newly established Nicaraguan National Guard in 1933, which had been established by the U.S. Marines as they withdrew from Nicaragua after 7 years of occupation. The Somoza family quickly took over the country, representing the wealthy Nicaraguan elite and U.S. interests for most of its corrupt 46-year reign, and violently squashing any political resistance by murdering thousands of citizens. Many members of the family were educated and received military training in the U.S. and regularly assisted the U.S. with imperialist political and military ventures in the region. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, never let the past slip away.
Quickly, you've been listening to This Week in Radical History, produced from the mobile fortress of Glee Glee Studios. This week's ending music is by System of a Down. Lastly, this reminder that I'm always and forever yours in a struggle, Mike Cannon.
Conversion software version 7.0. Looking at life through the eyes of a tire hub. Eating seeds is the best time activity. The toxicity of our city, of our city. Of a truck, eating seeds as a pastime activity. The toxicity of our city, of our city.
Sleep now. It'll hurt less in the morning.